Blog Let's Talk do it. Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh, 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 no. Oh yeah. It's Empowerment Saturday, brothers and sisters. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Roan, and the crew. Coming to you live Saturday. Dr. Bruce back in the chair. Brother George, Willie Lynch, Kwanzaa, and so much more. It's family time. Tell a friend. There's no degree greater. Better love, self and kind, no better love. So we welcome you. Welcome. Oh yeah. No better love. Welcome, brothers and sisters. Welcome one. Welcome all to African American Empowerment Saturday. Well, it's really every day, but y'all know. Y'all know what I mean. It's Saturday Empowerment. African Americans, if you go back and listen to some of the aspects of the show, you can't go wrong. We're working on empowering our people, and we're doing it in a simple way. We have to understand this is peace concept, right? The peace concept says we need peace within ourselves, within our mindsets, and within our communities. We need, as African Americans, right, the descendants of African American chattel slavery, we need a political agenda. That's right. A political agenda. And some of y'all be like, why we gotta get into politics? Because you gotta understand this system. And that's what I'm saying. Grab a hold of this, brothers and sisters. Understand the system and you can't go wrong. Learn the system and you can't lose, right? So learn the legal system. Learn the political system. Learn the economic system. Learn capitalism and how money works. I'm gonna say it over and over again until somebody ring the bell and say, okay, I'm woke, bro. I'm woke, Marvin. Let's go. You need to understand how money works and how this monetary and financial system works so we can help it learn to benefit us, right? It's all about us. So on this show, we're not talking about other people. That's not the focus. The focus is on improving and empowering us. And that's the work that we need to do. And then the A is personal, individual. That means you got to do the work of working on yourself. How? Mental, physical, emotional, and financial, of course. You got to get those things down pat within yourself that you push away from the table. I'm going to say it every week, that you get away from the processed foods, that you work out, that you take care of your heart health, right? Those things matter. But more important, taking care of your mental health and de-stressing. We have to take care of the mental aspect of it as well. Then there's C. Relevant cultural programs, again, like this one and many others that teach us our culture. And the culture is the blueprint. It's the roadmap. It's the guardrails to keeping our people in line and in check in terms of our behavior. And lastly, is education. It's a comprehensive education that helps us to learn more about who we are so we can become motivated, inspired, and empowered to become the best people that we can be. And we get to educate, treat, teach, train, and develop our children. And now, the Stan Macklin moment. Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Brothers and sisters, we have to learn how to heal, how to grow, how to help ourselves. We got to do that work. We have to be instrumental in being an impact in our communities and helping our young people and our families grow and prosper and heal from the trauma and the hurt and the pain of the mental, physical, social, cultural, and emotional conditions that we're in. We're going to have to do that work, and we're going to have to do it ourselves. Nobody else is going to do that for us. And now, without further delay, Brother George, I got you coming in just a minute. But I do want to welcome you in. Welcome the listeners in to our show for today. Welcome you so much. We appreciate you being here. Call a friend and tell them to listen to the show today. We need your support. We can't do it without you. We can't do it without you. All right. Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa. Brother George. Oh, yeah. Hey, mom.
Bring it. What?
Go ahead.
Uh-huh.
welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. How about yourself?
And I'm excited. We got another show. And I know you got a wonderful segment coming up for us. What you got?
Well, today's principle from the Nguza Saba is umoja, which means unity. To strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, race, and nation. Umoja. The name is this symbol. The name of this symbol translates literally as "bite not each other." It represents justice, peace, unity, and harmony. It reminds us to be as forgiving and compassionate as possible with one another in the interest of living peacefully together as brothers and sisters of one human family. And I think that's a great segue into our conversation today. Today, with the Willie Lynch segment, I'm going to read basically from the name of the book is 10 Commandments of Black Economic Power. And this is by Dr. Boyce Watkins. You know, it's a brother that I highly respect, and he's on a continuous mission, you know, to help our people better understand economics. Now, this is on the back cover of his book. I'm going to read something from the interior at another time, but I just want to give a segue into his book. We all know that black wealth matters in ways we can't even imagine. Black people in America are losing the wealth gain now more than ever. And despite years of government policies and wishful thinking, the racial wealth gap has only continued to grow. What if there were a way to not only close the racial wealth gap, but to create another gap that favors black people? Why are we crippled by the assumption that we must always lag behind other ethnic groups and imitate their ideas in order to be successful, when the reality is that our community possesses a level of cultural genius that puts us 100 years ahead of everyone else? That's what this book is all about. Within the text of this book lies a blueprint for black wealth and power unlike anything the world has ever seen. I lean into my years of training as a financial PhD, decades of teaching economic principles at major universities, and the half century I've spent on this earth as a black man to lay out the series of powerful steps, tools, and guidelines that can turn any family into a bastion of generational wealth that lasts for the next 100 years. Building black wealth is not just about changing the politics, assessing the resources, or obtaining the knowledge. It's about shifting the culture. And culture is spelled in all caps. That's where the goal and power are buried. That's where we're going to find it. And I'm really impressed with that segue, and I have read a little bit of the book, so I know where it's headed. But we do have to sincerely think about why it is that we continue to fail at black wealth. Maybe the brother's on to something, because we might be taking the wrong path, and the path to our salvation might be right within ourselves, is what I think he's pointing at. Now, I want to say a little bit today about
we just had a holiday this past Thursday, and many of y'all call it, you know, Thanksgiving. And, you know, for the family to gather together and to have a nice meal and, you know, feel grateful to each other, that's a great thing. However, that celebration has more contact with black people than what we know. You know, we had, I once was listening to a lecture by Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, and he was talking about the calendar. And he said that today we have a calendar that's confused with 28-day months and 31-day months and 30-day months and all of this, and you got to have a rhyme to figure out which one is which. He said, but in ancient times, we had figured that out to a T because we had 360 days, which meant that you had 12 calendar months with 30 days in each one. And the remaining 64 days, the remaining 5 days were the festivals to the gods, to thank the gods for the harvest, which is the same thing that Thanksgiving is based on. Now, when Dr. Bridges comes on, he's going to go into a little bit greater detail as to what I said when his segment starts. And so I wanted to kind of segue that into Dr. Bridges, and I want to turn it back over to Brother Marvin unless he has any questions.
Thank you, Brother George. That's a great segue. But I do want to add, today we got Slido going on. So if you want to chime in on the Slido side, it's slido.com. The number code today is 379-4092, 379-4092. If you want to call in at the question and answer period, it is 845-277-9250. Write that down, 845-277-9250. We got to do the work. We're talking about using African-centered education, right, to recapture our minds. And now, without further delay, we bring to you the great, powerful, and awesome Dr. Bruce. Dr. Bruce, are you there?
Yes, sir, my brother. Yes, sir, my brothers, Brother Marvin and Brother George.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. Thank you for having me. And glad to be here again with you this week, and enjoyed Brother George's comments, and I hope we got quite a few people on listening today. So as you said, we're going to discuss African-centered education as a tool that can be used for treating our sick minds, a tool that we can use to treat our sick minds. And our minds are sick, and in many cases they're dead, and we need to get them back. So that's what we're going to be discussing today. And to connect with that discussion, as Brother George has said, we wanted to look at the so-called holiday on day before yesterday and let our listeners know that we are, of course, not in the practice of condemning that, but we just want to humbly submit to our listeners that we as people should understand where we fit on the stage. African-centered education. And when we begin to recapture our African minds and our education becomes African-centered, then it becomes a little different from the education that I recall receiving many years ago around the Thanksgiving holiday. I recall being a part of a play in which I was a pilgrim, and I wore a stovepipe hat that was made with construction paper, and I wore black pants coming to my knees with white stockings that met the end of the black pants and black coats, and looking like what we have been taught that the pilgrims look like. This, brothers and sisters, is really romanticized history, romanticized by white people to show their superiority over other people who are already here in America. But our teachers did not know. Our preachers did not know. And many of them, even today, still do not know. But now knowledge is on the scene, and the lights are being turned on, and we as people can begin to wake up and to become enlightened because the lights are on today. Now we understand that we, and as I used to discuss Thanksgiving in my classes, I would go in just before the break, and it wouldn't take me long. I would put two dates on the board, 1621, and then put a dash after 1621. And beside the dash, I would say the first Thanksgiving in America, even though it was not really the first Thanksgiving, which we'll get back to in just a second as we recapture our African minds. But for our discussion, I put on the board 1621, the first Thanksgiving in America. And then under 1621, I would put 1619, the year that Africans came to America on slave ships. And let's qualify that. We also realize that we were here long before 1619. But just for, again, for terms of our discussion, 1621 is the date that we're given for the first Thanksgiving. 1619 is the date that we're given for African slaves being initially brought to the shores of America. So if you look at those dates, and if you just do the math, if 1621 was the year that the first Thanksgiving was held, and we came here in 1619, it should be very clear, if we subtract 1619 from 1621, you get two. We remained on the plantations of America for over four centuries. So you would know automatically that 2 years later, two years before the first Thanksgiving you came here, you were not at the table with any pilgrims eating cranberry sauce, turkey, and sweet potato pies. We were on the plantations, working the plantations, probably the cooks in the kitchen, but we were not at those tables. Now, that's one reason for us discussing Thanksgiving and making clear to our people where it came from. And another reason is, and to make them understand that it's not for us to be celebrating, and again, we're not saying that you shouldn't be with your families, you shouldn't have food, but it's a good time to have a session for discussion, have a classroom around the table, have a classroom in the den, in the living room, have a classroom and begin to teach what really happened. That's one reason when you look at the dates. Another reason for us not participating in the same way that Europeans participate is because we were the original people in this part of the earth, as we were the original people on all parts of the earth, all seven continents. We were the first people. We were the first people, or the indigenous people, on the shores of North America. The indigenous so-called Native Americans were black people dark-skinned people. We call them Indians, but they were not the pictures that we see today of the so-called Indians. But the original inhabitants were dark-skinned people who came to this country by way of what is called the Bering Strait. And I'm going to spell that word to those who are tuned in. We came to this country by way of the Bering, B as in black, E as in everlasting, R-I-N-G. We came by way of the Bering Strait. And the Bering Strait geographically connects Asia with North America. It connects Siberia with Alaska, you see. And that Bering Strait, many, many years ago, during the Paleolithic time period, a strait is a narrow passageway of water that connects these continents together. This strait, this water was ice. It was frozen. And people walked across the Bering Strait, which is about 51 miles long, and about 15,000 years ago, and came through to Alaska, and then came on down into Canada, and on further down into California and Oregon, and on the western part of the state, and on down into South America, and down into Central America. We travel into this particular part of the earth, and that Bering Strait was a connection. And that Bering Strait, a strait, as I said before, to those who might be taking notes, a little geography lesson here, that strait is a body of water that connects, that makes that connection. Whereas between North America and Central America, that's what we call an isthmus, I-S-T-H-M-U-S, an isthmus, I-S-T-H-M-U-S, which is from a Greek word which means neck. There's a neck or an isthmus that connects North America to South America, and that's called the Isthmus of Panama. And an isthmus connects two land masses, whereas a strait connects two water masses, you see. So these connections were made as African people who originated in Africa 3.5 to 4 million years ago begun to travel out from Central and Southern Africa all over the world. And we came across through India and China and Asia, and then came on down into North America, and we were the Native American people who were here. So when we celebrate the pilgrims and the pilgrims' pride and the pilgrim progress, we're celebrating the destruction of our people by those pilgrims who came here. We were celebrating the destruction of our people who were working in the fields, on the plantations, and who were also being having genocide committed upon them by the pilgrims. So we need to understand this history. We're not going to go into it completely, but I do want to make the point that even before we celebrated Thanksgiving, or the pilgrims celebrated Thanksgiving, the Native Americans had festival days that they celebrated even before Europeans came here. We always celebrated and gave thanks to our Creator for giving us a good crop, for giving the animals that we ate good food to graze upon. We thanked the Creator for bringing the rain. We thanked the Creator for bringing the sunshine. We thank the Creator for the change of the seasons. And we thank the Creator by giving ourselves names that related to various aspects of the creation. Chief rain cloud, little morning dove, who was the ancestor of Elvis Presley, which is another story, Native American, black descent. But we named ourselves Chief Sitting Bull, Little Running Bear, and names like that. We use names in the creation, Morning Star, Sister Sunshine, and names like that. You see, because we were given honor to the Creator who had given us the sun, moon, stars, rain, and the other aspects of nature to cause our crops to grow. So we gave him adulation by naming ourselves after what we saw in creation, you see. So Thanksgiving was nothing new for us, or giving thanks was nothing new for us. But we as people should not give thanks in the same way that white people give thanks, because theirs is entirely different. But when you don't know the history and you don't have your proper mind, then you think that you celebrate in the same way that your European conqueror or your European colonizer celebrates. There should be a difference, you see, because we are two different people and we have two different experiences. And what we celebrate is not what they celebrate. So I wanted to make that point clear. But as we recapture our African minds, we can understand this. This is why education is very important. This is why knowledge is very important. This is why we have to understand that we have to get back to thinking for ourselves and not allowing ABC, CBS, CNN, and these other networks to educate us. And so as I say in my book, having clearly shown that the minds of African people the world over are not their own, but rather the minds of the European enslaver, it is an absolute necessity that suggestions be offered to recapture our minds. And in offering these suggestions, perhaps, and having them heeded, this mental erosion can be slowed and eventually brought to a halt. And what do we say here? We say that all aspects of African and African-American life must be based upon African-centered thinking. Now, this could prove to be very painful to a lot of our listeners, because many of our people would have a hard time getting away from the very strict mold of Eurocentric thinking that we have had placed in our heads through our education in the schools, in the colleges, in the universities, in the churches. That's all we've ever had. But in order to do this, songs and stories that we tell little children in kindergarten and in primary schools, these songs and stories relayed to them by parents and teachers should have an African-centered focus. Tales of mythological characters such as Santa Claus and Peter Pan are not to be passed on if African people are to recapture their minds. Every effort must be made to bring an end to the deception in the minds of children. We must have a reality-based training, a very important part of our training, since it is understood that many of our people, it is understood that many of our people have not had this kind of education. You see, so as we say today on our program, the African American Empowerment Program, it is clear that the minds of our people are being recaptured when you cease to observe Christmas trees in the back of our cars, in our homes, and of all places in houses of worship. In the nurseries and daycare centers, teachers should read to children about their past and present greatness. This should be tremendous inspiration for the future of African people. I'm still reading in my chapter on page 219 of my book, Recapturing the African Mind, and I hope our listeners are tuned in today to our program. There's absolutely too much information and resource materials for African and African-American teachers on any level to shut the children off from enlightenment. Reminders must be planted into the fertile minds of African children of great African kingdoms and civilizations of greatness. Requirements should be made that the so-called teachers and professors become true teachers and professors. All right. Now, we're teaching today on recapturing the African mind, and I hope our people are tuned in to the program every Saturday at 2 o'clock p.m. And to those who might be telling other people, all they have to do is dial the phone number, 845-277-2000. 9250 and just listen. Just dial 845-277-9250 and we'll be on till 3:30 today as we look at it. Now, the when we talk about recapturing the African mind, the prefix re means to do again. The word capture means to seize, to latch onto, to return, to recapture anything that has been lost. There must first be an awareness that one's mind was possessed prior to the time that it was lost. Before African people can recapture their minds, they must obtain the knowledge of that which has been stolen or lost. We must study words and languages because these are the keys to unlock the doors to the history of African people. And this particular discussion reminds me of H. Rapp Brown when he made the statement. He says that we, meaning African people, are the greatest victims of colonial rule. We are exposed to this country's strongest institutions every day. We find that what is called education is not education at all. What it is white nationalist propaganda. I want to repeat that. H. Rapp Brown said this back in the 60s, and I quote him from his book, page 136, his book called Die, Nigger, Die. And he says that African people are the greatest victims of colonial rule. We are exposed to this country's strongest institutions every day. We find that what is called education is not education at all. What it is white nationalist propaganda. And that's what these holidays are that we'll celebrate. They're white nationalist propaganda. Again, they're white nationalist propaganda. White pilgrims, white Santa Claus, white elves, white Indians, so-called Indians, everything. White propaganda is what it really is. And it's the propaganda that is used as a part of capitalism, if we understand it, to begin to take money and resources from people this time of the year. We all know that people begin to put more on the credit card, borrow more at the banks, crime rate increases, anxiety increases, suicide increases when people are feeling alone or when they can't afford to buy things that they want to buy because this propaganda on television, on radio, billboard signs, Black Friday, all these things, it makes us feel deficient if we can't afford to participate. You see, so all kinds of problems come from this. But when you know who you are, and we know who we are as a people, we can duck and dodge this propaganda and get away from it and begin to use it as an alternative for us to get together, to teach, to preach, and to educate our people. And this is what we as people did on the plantations. We took our time off that the slave masters gave us, that the plantation owners gave us to reflect, to think, to commune, to do for self, to get food that we couldn't get during the regular times. We just used it as an alternative. We understood that it was not really ours, but as time went by, we began to buy into the system and we began to accept this holiday season in the same way that Europeans accept it because our minds were being lost. Our minds were being corroded, were being eroded, pardon me, and also corroded, I guess, but we were losing our minds. So we today have to get our minds back. Now, at Fisk University, a black university in the South, in 1933, Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois offered some words of guidance for African-American colleges in a graduation speech. And that graduation speech done in 1933 by Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois was entitled The Field and Function of the Negro College. I repeat, in 1933, W.E.B. Du Bois delivered a graduation speech entitled The Field and Function of the Negro College. And in that speech, he stated that in the past, he had been rather prodigal with advice, and because of his being prodigal, he felt the authorities at Fisk would have preferred his silence. Here are some of the excerpts from the speech by W.E.B. Du Bois. Now, he said he felt that some of the authorities would not want him to say this. But here's some excerpts that I dug up, which I have on page 221 of my book, Recapturing the African Mind, which people who have a copy can look at. He says on page 221, and I quote Dr. Du Bois, he says, "A university in Spain is not simply a university. It is a Spanish university. It is a university located in Spain. It uses the Spanish language. It starts with Spanish history and makes conditions in Spain the starting point of its teaching. Its education is for Spaniards, not for them as they may be or ought to be, but as they are with their present problems and disadvantages and opportunities." In other words, Du Bois said, I quote him, "The Spanish university is founded and ground in Spain, just as surely as a French university is French. There are some people who have difficulty in apprehending this very clear truth. They assume, for instance, that the French university is a singular sense universal and is based on a comprehension and inclusion of all mankind and their problems. But it is not. And the assumption that it is arises simply because so much French culture has been built into universal civilization. A French university, Du Bois says, is founded in France. It uses the French language and assumes a knowledge of French history. The present problems of the French people are its major problems, and it becomes universal only so far as other people of the world comprehend and are at one with France and its mighty and beautiful history." Now, Du Bois, as I stray away from the speech for a minute, I get right back to it. He talked about the French university. He talked about the Spanish university and what the French university should be and what the Spanish university should be. And he talked about how the French university has a focus on France, and the French university is founded in France and the French language, and how a Spanish university is founded in it uses Spanish language. So these universities are universities that are focused on French culture, French ideology. Just to make that clear. Now, as I go back into his speech, then he further says, "In the same way," meaning of the French university and the Spanish university, "a Negro university in the United States of America begins with Negroes. It uses that variety of the English idiom which they understand, and above all, it is founded or should be founded on a knowledge of the history of their people in Africa and in the United States and their present condition. Without whitewashing or translating wish into facts, it begins with that. And then it asks, how shall these young men and women be trained to earn, how should they be trained to earn How should they be trained to earn a living and live a life under the circumstances in which they find themselves, or with such changing of these circumstances as time and work and determination will permit? On the other hand," Du Bois says, "it will be, of course, idiotic to say, as the former industrial philosophy almost said, that so far as most black men are concerned, education must stop with this. No, starting with present conditions and using the facts and the knowledge of the present situation of American Negroes, the Negro university expands towards the possession and conquest of all knowledge." Now, what Du Bois is saying is that We should start with the knowledge of ourselves and then spread out to the knowledge of other people in the same way that the French and Spanish university does. This is what Dr. W.E. Du Bois is saying to us here in his speech. He says that we should start with ourselves. He says it seeks from a beginning of the history of the Negro in America and in Africa to interpret all history. I want to repeat that. It seeks, meaning the Negro University, from a beginning of the history of the Negro in America and in Africa to interpret all history. So what he's saying is that we should interpret our present conditions and interpret the history that we read here in this country based upon our African history, our African culture, and our African-American history and our culture, which goes back to what we were saying about recapturing our minds in the holidays. We should put the Thanksgiving holiday in the context of Africa, in the context of African-Americans, and the same way that we should put the context of the other holidays that we celebrate. Now, he says also that it seeks from the beginning of the history of the Negro in America and in Africa to interpret all history, from a beginning of social development among Negro slaves and freedmen in America and Negro tribes and kingdoms in Africa, to interpret and understand the social development of all mankind in all ages. He says it seeks to reach modern science and matter and life from the surrounding and habits and aptitudes of American Negroes, and thus lead up to understanding of life and matter in the universe. And this is a different program than a similar function would be in a white university or a Russian university or an English university, because it starts from a different point. In other words, he's saying we should start our thinking, our analysis, our synthesis, our understanding of things from our historical context. It is a matter of beginnings and integrations of one group which sweep instinctive knowledge and inheritance and current reactions into a universal world of science, sociology, and art. In no other way can the American Negro College function. It cannot begin with history and lead to Negro history. It cannot start with sociology and end with sociology. He says, and I end this from his book called The Education of Black People, Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois says, the university must become not simply a center of knowledge, but a center of applied knowledge and guide of action. And this is all the more necessary now, since we easily see that planned action, especially in economic life, is going to be the watchword of civilization. And that economic life that Du Bois is talking about ties right back into what Brother George was talking about here in terms of the reading he was done on black people and economics from the very beginning of our program. And I want to mention that about Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois and what he says. And just as we begin to end this segment for today, because we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Now, like W.E.B. Du Bois, there's an African scholar by the name of Ngugi Wa Thiong'o, Ngugi Wa Thiong'o. And I'm going to spell that because I know some of our people do take notes and want to write things down and to follow up a little later on. Ngugi, spelled N-G-U-G-I, Ngugi, N-G-U-G-I, middle name Wa, just like it sounds, W-A, Wa, and last name Thiong'o. T-H-I-O-N-G-O, T as in terror, H-O-N-G-O, Ngugi Wa Thiong'o. He says in his book, and his book is called similar to mine, his book is called Decolonizing the African Mind, which is similar to my book, which is called Recapturing the African Mind. He's talking about decolonizing the African mind. But in his book, Decolonizing the African Mind, Ngugi Wa Thiong'o understood that correct thinking would deem it necessary for African literature to be at the center and for other cultures to be studied in relationship to it as opposed to African culture being studied in relationship to other cultures. He's saying, brothers and sisters, that it is necessary for African literature to be at the center and for other cultures to be studied in relationship to African literature, as opposed to African literature being discussed in relationship to other cultures. In other words, African literature should be at the center. He also emphasized the importance of the African oral tradition and the East African language of Kiswahili. In Decolonizing the African Mind, the book by Wathiongo, he bids farewell to the use of the English language. Now, in Kenya, where Wathiongo was from, of course, Kenya was colonized by the British. And in Kenya, Kenyan people speak the English language better, really, than African Americans. They're taught by the British. And Wathiongo was so against the British culture that he got to a point in his life where he even stopped writing or speaking in the English language. Though he was very proficient at speaking and writing in the English language, he stopped. So I wanted to just mention that because in his book, he bids farewell to the use of the English language in his writings, as I just said. In trying to reach the masses, he believed that it had to be done through the use of indigenous languages. Now, of course, we here in America, all we know is English, you see, so we have to use what we have or what we can. English, he thought, back to the book, English, he thought, erases memories of traditional cultures and installs a dominant, insidious colonial culture. He says that English erases memories of traditional cultures and installs a dominant, insidious colonial culture. It is still a challenge today in African-American college academic circles for African-American professors to get busy and do research and to ultimately disseminate information that will raise the consciousness of African-American students. The black so-called educator has to first admit that he or she has been a victim of menticide. I want to repeat that. We as African-American professors, teachers, preachers, or whatever the case may be, must admit that we are victims of menticide. And menticide, of course, side from the words like homicide, meaning the death of, suicide, to kill oneself, death of, side. Menticide means we have been killed mentally. Menticide, as defined by Bobby Wright in 1985, is the deliberate destruction of the collective mind of a group or individual. It is conducted by the penetration and perpetuation of an alien culture, values, belief systems, or ideas for the express purpose of control. Menticide makes use of institutions such as church and university and the media, which project values, images, beliefs, and the like. Illusions are created by menticide upon its victims. Some illusions are freedom, American citizenship, intelligence based upon degrees from universities, correctness due to standards set by the dominant society, and wealth based on having more than the average working person. These are ways in which menticide is perpetuated among people in this society. They make us think that we're free, that we have American citizenship. It's almost like like Malcolm used to say, how can you call yourself a citizen or call yourself a citizen of America, but yet you cannot participate in the rights of other citizens in this country? You're going to call yourself a diner, but you can't sit up to the counter to dine. You can't sit in a restaurant to dine, you see. So he says that there are illusions that are created by menticide that have been created upon us as a people. And as I began to conclude today, black educators, I'm on page 224 of my book, Recapturing the African Mind. Black educators must systematically reject the outdated, antiquated, obsolete, traditional Eurocentric academic approaches. New frames of references must be developed that soar beyond the Euro-American concepts. An entirely new mind has to be placed in the heads of African and African-American people. And I'm going to end right there. An entirely new mind has to be placed in the heads of African and African-American people in order for us to recapture our minds. And when we come back 2 weeks from now, I will pick up right there on page 224, and we'll begin talking about Dr. Frantz Fanon, who wrote a book called The Wretched of the Earth. And I'm marking it in my book, so I will start there. But I thought that was a good place for us to stop right here. And I'm going to say it one more time before I give it back to Brother Marvin, because it's very important. Black educators must systematically reject the outdated, antiquated, obsolete, traditional, Eurocentric academic approaches. New frames of references must be developed that soar beyond the Euro-American concepts. And this statement is very important. An entirely new mind has to be placed in the heads of African and African-American people. Hope you got something from the lecture, and I hope the Creator grants you the light of understanding of what we're doing on the African-American Empowerment Program as I give it back to Brother Marvin.
Dr. Bruce, educational and informative. And that's what the African-American Empowerment Association is all about, is the empowerment, the education of African-Americans, right? How we acknowledge that there's some things that we need to learn, unlearn, and possibly relearn, but we have to educate ourselves. And one of the components, again, is education, because knowledge is power. We have to educate ourselves for the development of our people, just as simple as that. All right, Dr. Bruce, thank you again. Great job, Brother George and Dr. Bruce. Are going to go to the lines. We also have some Slidos on deck as well. The number, 845-277-9250, if you want to call in and talk live with myself, Brother George, and Dr. Bruce, or you can send us over an anonymous comment through Slido, slido.com. The number is 379-4092. And the Slido is pretty full today. Dr. Bruce, you've been getting some hits over there. And we'll go to that in just a minute, but we'll start on the call-in lines. And let's go to the first one on the deck today is 9282. 9282, good afternoon. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm going to start this conversation with the greeting words of peace, brother. As-salamu alaykum. I hope all is well for all of you within
peace,
sound
brother.
Of my voice. Yes, sir, brother. Thank you for this opportunity again. Let me start by saying kudos to Dr. Bruce. Kudos to Dr. Bruce, okay? And I'm going to piggyback on something he said about Rap Brown, and what Rap Brown said, and it prompted a couple of questions in my mind. First one is, where are the black people who know this, what Rap Brown was saying? When you say this system, this educational system that we're in, is basically, I don't remember the quote verbatim, but it's propaganda. It's a lie, and we're engulfed in it every day of our lives. Where are those people, our black folk, that understand this, like Dr. Bruce presented it, that heard this, that noticed? These are the things we need to be explaining to our people, getting our people to understand. And the next question is, how are we defining wealth? See, wealth, do we need to be wealthy? Well, how are we defining wealth? We must not tie wealth to money, to a medium of exchange that we did not create nor control. Wealth needs to be, in my opinion, wealth needs to be tied to love, to unity, to togetherness, functioning as one. Then we can be what we can. One or two of us can have money, can have billions of dollars, but we as a people are not wealthy, okay? And as a people, going back to Thanksgiving, we thank our Creator for our minds, for our greatness. That's what we're thankful for, because we must start to see ourselves as gods, as the gods we are, as the Creator. We reproduce ourselves to continue our creation. We reproduce our children not to take care of them, but to prepare them to continue with our God creation. Because you see, we must understand God dies. Let me say that again. God dies. The original God is dead, because a law of God is, if you are born, you will die. But life is eternal. And I want to add in with this too. We must understand that. That we prepare, God gave us, our creator, our daddy, gave us the ability to reproduce life and to continue that life. What we do not do, we reproduce it, but we lack knowledge of ourselves and kind, so we're not passing forward the knowledge of God, the knowledge of ourselves, the knowledge of our creation to our children. And we are on the verge of becoming extinct if we don't, because that's what, quote unquote, the devil wants to kill our everlasting life. All right? And 2 weeks from today, I must add, and with this, Dr. Bruce will be in Richmond. That's 2 weeks from today.
All right, brother. I like the plug. I like the plug.
Thank you, brother.
And also, I want to thank you. We're going to have our latest edition of Peace newsletter coming out, thankful to our editor, Brother Booker, here. We're going to have that coming out. We'll have copies online as well as on December the 10th when Dr. Bruce arrives here in Richmond for his performance. I said performance.
Yes, sir, brother.
He's going to be live.
Sir,
come out and join us for that. And thank you, brother, as well. Dr. Bruce, do you have a comment or response for the brother? Thank you, brother.
Just want to say, really, no more for me to add to what the brother said, except that I agree with him 100%. And just want to reiterate to those who are tuned in and who can make the program on December 10th in Richmond, Virginia, I intend to serve a meal. Won't be a Thanksgiving meal, but I'm going to serve a meal. And so that you won't misunderstand, when I say meal, we eat on several levels. This meal will not be one that you're going to take in through your mouth. This is one you're going to take in through your minds. And I'm going to feed you a good meal on December 10th when we come to Richmond, Virginia. You see, things happen on more than one level. All right, let's go to our phone lines, Brother Marvin, or Slido, whichever way you want to go with it.
All right. Well, let's slide on over to Slido. Again, thank you, brother. And, again, Dr. Bruce, December the 10th, 4 p.m. in Richmond. You don't want to miss it. Dr. Bruce on tour in Richmond. All right, let's go over to Slido, slido.com. The first question is, where can I learn more about the first Thanksgiving in America?
Let's see, there are many sources. Actually, let's see, there's one, a very good one. A book called Africa's Gift to America by J.A. Rogers is a very good book source. And you can also actually, and essentially, if you have access to the computer, as most people do, you can look it up on the computer and just type in the same question that you just typed in through Slido. Type that in on your computer, and it will come up and give you more information and take you back further than the 1621 date. But J.A. Rogers talks about how the native people here were destroyed and how heads were cut off and how how the Native Americans were sodomized and all kinds of things that went on at the first Thanksgiving. But you're not going to hear that because, as H.R.F. Brown said, and to tie back into what Brother Booker said, it's white nationalist propaganda that they're feeding our people, and they're not going to give you the truth. It's just propaganda, you see. So that's just one good source, and go online and get more, and move on to some others.
All right, thank you, Dr. Bruce. Next question. What do you suggest we do as an alternative? Thanksgiving is all many of us know.
All right. I think I answered that in the lecture, but if it was not clear, I'll answer it again. Use the date as we did on the plantation, because we're still on the plantation. If you don't think we're on the plantation, look at our wealthiest people like Carrie Irvin and our entertainers like Whoopi Goldberg. Look at our entertainers like David Chappelle. Look at others that I could call the roll on, and who Kanye West, and who have made statements about the system, and look at how they have to bow down, have to tuck their tails between their legs and run and hide and take back everything that they've said in the same way that we had to do on the plantations. It's just on another level today. So what we need to do with our time is to get together, have sessions when we're with all these people, these Thanksgiving dinners, at the family's friends, whatever the case may be, church, and then somebody began to teach about it and show and discuss where we were during the time, as I did, of 1621. As Bob Marley says, show who you are and where you stand in the struggle. Ask the questions like, were we at the table with the pilgrims, or were we on the plantations? Were we in the fields? Were we in the house? What were we doing? As I said earlier, Afrocentrize our education, or make it Afrocentric, and where we become the center and not talk about the pilgrims and Thanksgiving. Enjoy the meal. I'm not saying that, as the caller said, because that's all that we know. But we can still use it, as we did on the plantations hundreds of years ago, as a time to reflect, to teach, to preach, and to wake us up as a people, mm-hmm. and make us understand that we don't have to have anybody tell us when to buy a turkey. Buy a turkey when you want to buy a turkey. If you don't want to buy one, don't buy one. But the propaganda pushes us that way. So that's my answer to that question. Use the time to begin to educate and to awaken our people to the true knowledge of what happened, because we understand that they're into it, but do it in that way. And eventually what you're going to find happen is people are going to say, I don't have to do this. You know, we can get together and talk and have a class or whatever, but we don't have to do it the same way white folks do. But anyway, Brother Mom, let's move on.
All right. That's education for you. Knowledge is power again. All right, let's go to 0148. 0148, going right down the line. 0148, join next year live. Got Dr. Bruce, Brother George, and myself. Welcome to the show.
Peace and blessings, brother. Again, supporting the program and listening in. And I really love that very first question that first caller had asked. Who are those black people? And I like to add on to that. Where are they found? You know, we have these critical questions: who, what, when, why, for what. And in addition to all of that, where can we find those individuals so we can either bring them out or come to them so we can get a clearer picture? But once again, as always, supporting the program every Saturday, peace and blessings. Thank you all.
All right. Thank you, Brother Lush. Dr. Bruce, what can we find?
Yes, sir. That's a good question, Brother Lush asked. Now, a lot of those people, you really don't see them in the traditional roles on our colleges and our universities, and you don't see them writing those kinds of things. They're not there. But what you have to do is go to some of those guerrilla sources, some of the alternatives on YouTube, and listen to some of the brothers who are there, like Brother Oba T. Shaka, who you can pull up on YouTube, who's a scholar, retired professor at the a university in San Francisco, California, and Dr. Greg Carr, and many of you who are tuned in have heard him before, and other people. And hopefully real soon, Brother Marvin, I'm going to put this on you now. We're going to get together, and we're going to be doing some similar kinds of things that we're talking about now and try to put it out there more so than we're doing now today. But these are some of the underground sources that we need to study and to take advantage of, so that we can learn more. But the traditional way, you don't find it in the traditional universities and colleges and high schools, because as we talked about a few weeks ago, the systems in America are making teachers who teach history and who teach humanities and who know the black influence of Macbeth and Macduff and who understand mathematics and that African people are the originators of math and science and technology. Those kinds of people are afraid to teach now in certain school systems in America because they will be chastised and can lose their jobs. So this is why there must be an underground system. Our Saturday schools, as Dr. Rogers talked about, the churches and other places, the community centers, because we're not going to get them in the traditional, and they're beginning to crush that. And I'm going to talk more about that, too, when I come to Richmond. I'm going to talk about the fact that communities in America were destroyed, like Tulsa and Elaine, Arkansas. But at the same time that these communities were massacred by white people today are beginning to massacre us mentally and to exactly, they're about to put this force of barrage against our Afrocentric education and against our teaching of our history and our culture in the same way they did it on a physical level many years ago. They're doing it today on a mental level to destroy us. And I can tell by your responses, you kind of like that already.
Already, brother. if you are educated and you out there listening right now, let's hear from you, 845-277-9250. Is that the case, that you guys are not able to teach like you should or teach history and culture? That's any educator that's out there, 845-277-9250. Let's hear from you before the show ends. And let's slide on over to Slido, Dr.
And before
Bruce,
you go to Slido,
question.
Brother Marvin, I want to say this real quick, and that is that educators who would, in many cases, our so-called educators, brother, have to be re-educated. We've not been educated. They don't know this information that we're giving out today. Many of them never heard of Frantz Fanon or Ngugi Wa Thiong'o or Bobby Wright or some of the other people's names that I've called, or Gerald Manson that I called, or people like Albert Churchward that I called, and people like Count Volney, who talked about how the Ethiopian did what he did and laid out the heavens, and how Algebra Wal Muqabala was the name of the course that was contracted or reduced to algebra, that was started by Muhammad ibn Musa al-Khwarizmi, the North African mathematician. They don't know this. They teach math, but they don't know this. I will never forget, then I'll let you go to Slido. I was speaking at a conference down at Texas Southern University, and I was talking to a faculty of math, the math faculty at the school, and I was talking about the origin of mathematics, and there was a PhD in mathematics who stood up when I finished, and he said to me, he said, you know, I've been teaching algebra, and I never knew where it came from, never even thought about it in terms of the origins. He said, I teach the concepts, I teach the exercises, I show students how to conduct those exercises in those algebraic problems, but I never thought about the root and the origin, you see. But when you understand the root, then you can understand the fruit. And we must remember that the most important part of any plant is the root. And when you don't have the root, you don't have the life. You don't have the essence. You don't have the nutrients, the nourishment. You don't have the oomph that you would have when the root is destroyed. So that's the reason
that
European people have never given us the roots of knowledge. It's so much, Brother Mom. Let's move on.
All right. Dr. Bruce just laid it down. All right, let's go over to Slido and over to Slido. The question is, are you saying we as black people are Native Americans?
Many of us are. There's no doubt about it. That's a part of our history. That link has been destroyed. That link has been cut off. Yes. And you can do the research on it, as I have myself, and you can see, when you look at the origin of the Sioux, the origin of the Pequots up in Rhode Island and in the New England areas, and the Wampanoag people and the Lenape in the area of Delaware and New Jersey, and when you see the Muscogee and the Washita, and when you see the Chickasaw, the Choctaw, the Coromantee, the Creek, these native indigenous people were black people, and the pictures were changed, the images were changed, the propaganda of wagon train, the propaganda of Paladin, the propaganda of Gunsmoke, the propaganda of John Wayne, and all these things aided in erasing this. And this is another lecture in within itself. I've done quite a bit of it, but they've erased what the original people looked like. But when you go onto your computer, the internet, access to the World Wide Web, you can find sources and books and pictures that describe these indigenous people, and they look just like you and me. And that's why Grandma said many years ago, I'm part Cherokee, or my aunt was part Lumbee Indian from down in southwestern North Carolina. I'm part Sioux. They would say this because they knew it and they had some connections with their past, and they understood it but didn't know it exactly and didn't have it quite right. But David Imhotep in his book talks about it, you see. So, yes, to answer your question, yes, we are the indigenous people, the original people of this land, the Native Americans, were dark-skinned people, no question about it. To answer that question.
All right. To piggyback off of that question, and then we'll go back to the lines. Why is it important that we think of natives in America to be light in complexion rather than the actual dark skin of the indigenous people? Why is it important that we think of natives? Go ahead,
brother. Right. I was about to say it's not important to us, but I know what the question is asking. European people have always made any kind of skin the lighter to be the better and the darker to be the worse or the inferior. The lighter they whitened out the Native American people who were black and made them white, that was closer to being like them. They whitened the Native Americans. They whitened the mythological characters like Santa Claus. They made Santa Claus white. They made the elves white. They made the dwarfs white. They made the little pixies and the gypsies and the other people. Whiten up as much as you possibly can. They whitened up Robert the Bruce. They whitened up King James. They whitened King James the Eighth of Scotland. They whitened Queen Anne Boleyn, though there was a program on television just recently where Anne Boleyn was being portrayed by a black woman, and there was a lot of flack that came up behind that. But they whitened the indigenous people of England and Scotland and Ireland and made us think that they were all white. They didn't tell us that the great singer Taylor Swift is so great and so creative because of her Scotch-Irish blood, which could be traced back to the Highlanders of Scotland who were called the Salieres before coming to America, which is another lecture. They don't tell us about that, but that whole Appalachian area was an area that was inhabited by black people that came from Ireland and Scotland, inhabited those areas and mixed in with other people, you see. So that's another lecture, brother Mom. You got to cut me off, man.
Right.
Cut me off. Start cutting
all right.
Me off.
Burn it up,
I mean,
Dr.
Just,
Bruce. Educate these folks. They need
I'm
education.
Trying my
we
best.
We need education. All right, let's go back to the lines. 47, 56, you're up next. You got your hand raised. Come on up. What you got? Question, comment.
What?
475.
I want to say greetings. This is Brother
Great.
Warren from New Orleans. Been a long time there.
Hey, Brother
Maul.
Warren.
Yeah, that's it.
Long time. How you doing, sir?
Everything's fine down here in New Orleans. I've been traveling, but I'm back in business. Got my show running back up and everything. But I wanted to ask Professor Dr. Bruce.
What kind of show do you do, Brother Warren? First time I've heard you on the program.
I have a blog talk radio show called New Orleans Wake Up, and I deal with issues that affect the black world, both locally, nationally, and internationally. So you can go on Blog Talk and Google New Orleans Wake Up, or just Google New Orleans Wake Up and Blog Talk, and you see my archive of shows. But
okay, maybe one day you might want to have me as a guest, and we can talk about the Ouachita and the Creoles down there in New Orleans.
No problem. And this is what I call for. Now, I take a different position on. Look, I know I've been on reservations, and I know some Native American groups in Louisiana, and I've been out to the Midwest, and these Native Americans, they don't look black, they don't look white, they look distinct and different. And I have never read any of the scholars, not even Van Sertima, who claim that the Native Americans were black people. And this is kind of where I'm kind of having a little problem with a lot of this, because a lot of the young people are following this thing where they're saying they're not African, they have no ancestors from Africa. Now, when you look at DNA results, it's clear. You have most white people, by the way, are like almost 100% white. That's very clear. You see black people in the Americas, you see the variation as a result of actually intermingling with we're going to white as a result of rape. And very, very little Native American genetic stock shows up in African Americans, very, very little. So I'm just kind of struggling with.
But if you go, brother, back into some of those earlier sources before they began to delete them out of the system and not allow them to be used in schools and to be placed into libraries, you would see the description of these Native people by people who came here, like Magellan and Columbus and Vasco da Gama and Sir Walter Raleigh, who scoured the coast of North and South Carolina. Look at the descriptions of these mm-hmm. people who saw the original people and see what they say about them. And you can find pictures of these people also. And by you doing a blog program, I think you go on YouTube, you can see some of the scholars are showing pictures of these Native indigenous people who are very black. Or the Pequots that I talked about earlier up in the black so-called Indians up who own the casinos up in Connecticut. They're black Indians. They're black. They're dark-skinned people, you see. And
but,
you can go...
We know that enslaved Africans had been in the Americas at least since the early 1500s. We know that enslaved Africans, like on the Atlantic coast, many of them escaped and lived among the indigenous and mixed with them. Right here in Louisiana, you have certain state-recognized tribes that look African American, but then there are those who don't look African American. They look Asian, and so
I was about to say, but go back prior to what you're talking about us mixing in with these Native Americans. Go back to what I was talking about with those people who originated in Central Africa and who came up through Ethiopia and through Egypt and came across the so-called Suez Canal and through India and China and came down that land bridge, who originated in Africa. Then there was a lot of mixture going on, and those kinds of things is where you get these differences of colors. And let me give you an example. Have you ever seen what the so-called Eskimos look like up in Alaska in that area? The Inuit people, the people called the Inuit, I-N-N-U-I-T.
I've seen the pictures of Inuit people.
They dark-skinned people. The eyes might look a little different. The hair might be a little different, but these are dark-skinned people. But I think the problem is that some people are having, and I think what it is with you also, is that over hundreds and hundreds of years, the mixture, as you said yourself, and intermingling of people have caused it to be kind of confused.
What I'm saying, Dr. Bruce, is that you had approximately over 11 to 15 million Africans who made it alive in the Americas. That accounts for my study of history of what we call black people. Now, how do we go from... We know that there are some of these Native Americans, you have white people represent them, but what about the ones who don't look white or black, whose genetic makeup is totally different from black and white people? It's kind of like we're trying to eliminate their existence. And I've been on these reservations, and a lot of these Native Americans, particularly out west, they don't look black. Their genetic makeup doesn't show any continental African connection.
I think what it is the only thing I can point to, brother, is what I said. I think it's over so much mixing and meshing and intermingling of the blood of these people from hundreds of years, thousands of years going back is what caused it. Let me give you another example. You can find, if you go, I'm going back over to the British Isles again, to places like Scotland and Ireland. When you look at the Scottish mm-hmm. and the Irish today, you don't see anything at all that looks like black. But when you trace it back to the origin, back to Cheddar Man, who was 10,000 years old, found in Somerset Gorge in England, he was a black man with straight hair and blue eyes. You see,
But Dr. Bruce, I have DNA matches with people from Scotland and all that. They have no African genetic makeup at all in their DNA profile. Not even 1%.
Now, all of them may not, but there are many who do now. Anyway,
no, they don't, because I match quite a few of them. White people are white. White people are white. And then in the United States, you might find some white people with 3 to 4% and we are black. And we know that because of the intermixture here. You have some black people passed as white people and then live as white, but still have that African genetic DNA in their blood. But most white people from Europe, there is no African DNA, nothing at all in them.
Now, let's do this. Let's do this.
That might be another show.
Let's make that another show. Maybe we can get together with Brother Warren and hash it out.
Yeah, maybe we can. And I was about to ask him one quick question, Brother Marvin, before you go on. How are you going to discount the original inhabitants of these lands being black people and then everything coming from them not having that DNA that you're talking about? What are you going to say to the fact?
I do believe there were some small presence of blacks in certain areas, but that didn't make up the bulk of the population in those places. And just the population in the United States today doesn't match the original population that was here. It's been covered over. So with all due respect, I'm a student of Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, I knew Dr. Van Sertima, and he never said any of this stuff.
Well, see, Doctor, you must realize too, brother, that there's a great, which is another lecture I intend to do one time. We have to begin to rethink and revise a lot of the information that Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, Dr. Van Sertima, and others had when they were on the scene. We have access now to a great deal more information than we had during that time. Would you agree with that?
Dr. Bruce, no one.
All right, I gotta cut y'all. Brother Warren, love you. Dr. Bruce, I love you, but I got to cut it.
All right, brother.
We'll get back together and do it the right way. All right. Thank you, Brother Warren. Appreciate you.
Okay.
All right, Dr. Bruce. So we're going to go down to, 5347. Before I go there, knowledge is power, right? These are the kind of discussions we got to have. We just do, because facts are facts, right? And as we continue to hash out the facts from the data and the resources and the research that we do, we can have a responsible conversation to develop a collective consciousness. 5347, you're up next. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce, Brother George, or myself? 5347.
As always, I love just sitting back listening, man. This is Brother Red down in New Bern, man. So,
hey, Brother
Rich,
how you doing?
All right, man. So over the next about 6 weeks, I'll be sitting out in California with the brothers out there and family listening to you guys. So I'll just be spreading you out to the West Coast. So but that was
all
great.
Right.
But what I'd like to just say, though, is I'd like to make sure that the educators that are out there that are not even getting into this perspective of sharing and opening up their minds to it, we need to figure out how to get to them and open up their minds so that they can venture into these realms. And so that's what I'll be trying to do, because there are several of my kids and married people in the family that they're teachers out there, and I'll be sharing you guys' program with them. So keep up the good work, and thanks for opening up the line to me. And stay strong, my brother. You guys stay into the work there, all right?
All right. Thank you, Brother Reg. And you mentioned California. There is documentation of the California Indians with Queen Khalifa out there well before they settled this country. On the west side. All right, Dr. Bruce, you got anything before we go to 5611?
No, just want to thank Brother Reggie for his call, and thank you for always tuning in to us.
All right, Brother Reggie will be taking the show out to the west coast, y'all. All right, 5611, you're up next. If you have a question or comment, you're live. 5611. Sound like they just listening. All right, let's move down to 5416. 5416, are you there? Are you listening? Do you have a question or comment?
My people perish for lack of knowledge, and I sure appreciate this show for the knowledge that is given, the expansion of ideas and history. I'm a history buff, and I had never listened to the show without being, you know, enchanted, but actually overwhelmed with the knowledge that I don't know that I need to sit down and get into my system. So keep doing what you're doing. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Brother John. We appreciate you, and thank you for listening. We'll have Dr. Bruce here in Richmond on the 10th of December. Stop by and join us. Thank you, Brother John. All right, let's go back over to Slido, Dr. Bruce. The next question is, what is a good working definition of African-centered thinking? We got about 5 minutes left, so we'll have to make this the last one. Oh, and I'll add this one, too. Did these black people called Olmecs build the structures called pyramids in the Americas or Ameru? Two questions.
Okay. Now, what was your first one, Brother Marvin? The definition
What's
of...
What's a good working definition of African-centered thinking?
Okay. Let's see. I'm going to go right to the book that we're discussing, Recapturing the African Mind, and I'm going to read the definition for African-centered thinking straight from the book, and it is a definition that says, all aspects of African and African-American life must be based upon African-centered thinking. This could prove to be very painful since most African people would have to crack the very strict mold of Eurocentric thinking. African-centered thinking is thinking that puts the African at the center and at the focus of the discussion, and also puts him in the context of world history as the center, or at the center of the stage. That's what African-centered thinking is. When you begin to see yourself as a center, the focus is on you, and everything revolves or imitates around you and your culture and your heritage and where you fit into the picture. That's what African-centered thinking is.
All right. There you have it. All right. We got about 3 minutes left in the show, Dr. Bruce. So final comments from you till we get with you next time. And hopefully, again, we got Dr. Bruce coming to Richmond, Virginia, on Saturday, December the 10th at 4 p.m. at the Downtown Library. You don't want to miss it. Come join us in our fellowship as we continue to empower, educate, motivate, and inspire our African-American community wherever we are. Dr. Bruce, final comments.
All right. I want to use the same final comment as I did before. An entirely new mind has to be placed in the heads of African and African-American people in order for us to recapture our minds. Thank you very much, Brother Marvin.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Great job. And just, man, you know, you got a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of information. Continue to share that with us and continue to do your work to be a diligent educator for our people. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Brother George.
Yes, sir.
Thoughts?
Well, I think that one of the questions that needs to come up in the next conversation that we have about the people in this part of the world is, what does native mean? What does indigenous mean? What does aboriginal mean? Because that is very significant to why we're talking about these different groups of people and not really delving into what that really means. Does native mean that they're native, that this land produced them? Or did they come from somewhere else and come here later than another group of people that were already here? That discussion needs to be understood to fully understand what Dr. Bridges is talking about. And I think that needs to be put into the next time we bring this topic up. That's it for me, brother.
Oh, all right. Great point. Great point. Brother George, Dr. Bruce, Brother George, thank you so much for your support. And now, as we close out, take the time to reflect on not only just what we call Thanksgiving, but the power that we have collectively to give thanks for our ancestors who survived the worst human Holocaust in known human history. That's it for this week. Something to think about. Until next week, y'all know what to do. Stay plugged in. Stay positive. stay in the right mind as we continue to recapture our African minds right here every Saturday at 2 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks, brothers and sisters. Until next week, peace and blessings. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.